This is an Enterprise Times podcast with Ian Murphy and Stuart Clark. We're here today talking about the challenge of interpreting threat intelligence data. Good morning, Stuart. This week, you put out a press release about companies who were drowning under the amount of threat intelligence data they were receiving. How have we gone from 5 years ago talking about no data to now talking about so much data they still can't make a decision?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I think we've managed to lead ourselves down the garden path effectively, where we've been, storage is incredibly cheap today. So we store more and more information, but actually we've got no context about what that information is. And we increasingly don't recognize that contained within our data repositories and our data lakes is a sensitive material. There's PCI data, there's PII data, healthcare information. Depending on the different organization, there's legislation to abide with. But we don't have any real understanding of what's in our data lakes. And what's really been missing is we've just blindly been building up data repositories, and we've got no governance over our data at all. So this is becoming an increasing challenge from a security point of view, because all of that data, we're putting security controls around it, or we think we are, but we don't actually know what security controls to put around the data, if that makes sense.
It does. And actually, we've got multiple challenges here. We've got suddenly a huge amount of data coming in from log files and servers that we're finally pulling into a single pool. But similarly, we've got all that company data, much of it unstructured data. It's all going into the same place. Let's break it into two problems, first of all. Let's start with the data coming in. Why are we not seeing people applying just some basic business intelligence to screen that incoming data from logs and other locations to consolidate it and understand what the threat is?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of reasons. I think a lot of people really aren't sure what the right technology is to approach that. There's a real nervousness, I feel, around software providers saying we have a solution to do X, Y, and Z. And I think what actually happens is you end up buying solutions to do specific tasks. Mm-hmm. So you'll buy a log solution, you'll buy a network solution, an IDS, an IPS. You'll buy lots of different solutions in isolation. And what you end up doing is building the security Frankenstein, where you're bolting lots of different pieces together. Mm-hmm. They do things very well in isolation, but they're not actually giving you anything meaningful because they don't have context of the broader picture.
But this is not a new problem. I mean, people have been rolling their own security suites for a long time, and it's those cracks between the products where they overlap but don't overlap, or they don't even butt up, that's made it easy for attackers to get in. We have seen HP, IBM, Symantec, a number of vendors try and close that. What is stopping people finally building a coherent security solution?
I think there's quite a few things, really. Technology is not the fundamental answer. I think that's a fundamental thing. And also, we don't have enough understanding of what we're trying to protect is a big issue as well. We don't really have full context of what these data silos contain, mm-hmm. so we don't know how best to secure them and prevent against security attacks. But there's the other element to that. There's the processes you need to put in place. There's levels of education that need to be put in place, both at a board level and all the way down to individual members of staff. So I think that's why we're seeing a real slowness and of adaptation. And also, from a technology point of view, integration seemed to be an incredibly attractive offering. So a lot of the big vendors you mentioned, they're integrating and acquiring lots of different pieces of technology. But the integration's not tight enough. The transparency across the data is really not there, because you're plugging in lots of different pieces of tech. And I think that's, again, why there's a big nervousness. And from a board level perspective, if you're coming to me with the solution that's going to solve all my problems, I'm going to be very nervous about that. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, is fueling this problem.
You mentioned culture. Culture goes along with education. The two of them are overlooked. When we have education, it tends to be technical education. Do this, don't do that. Security Culture Conference early this year in Norway focused very much on soft skills. But that also brings in diversity. Most security teams are white males. So how do they understand how that phishing attack is aimed at women or children or people of other ethnic groups?
Yeah, it's a great question, and culture is a massive challenge, actually. And we don't have enough understanding of a particular thing that interests me is taken inside a threat, for example. What are the decisions which go through an individual's mind that lead them to disclose or steal information from their employer? do we actually have any idea? And I think the answer is no, we don't. But there are there must be trigger points, but we don't take enough time to understand what those trigger points are. And are there ways that we can identify that these series of actions or this particular environment is going to breed certain types of activity?
But how intrusive can we get? I joined the armed forces in 1976, and as part of signing the Official Secrets Act, you were warned about issues of drinking and homosexuality and how these things put you in a position of being blackmailed. They're still valid today for some people, albeit they shouldn't be, but companies aren't in a position, and nobody would necessarily want them in a position to be poking into the life of their staff in that way. So how do we find those pressure points without becoming a totalitarian organisation?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a big issue. Privacy is a huge issue. In Europe, we've got particular problems with it because Europe is every state has its own particular privacy laws and legislations. I think it's got to be, security's got to be part of the culture, not enforced on the culture. Mm-hmm. We increasingly put very strict, rigid rules around employees and people, and that, done in the wrong way, that can actually breed basically an underground culture where people try and circumvent those rules. And that's a great example of it being forced on people rather than being part of the culture, if you like. And I think it's a two-way process. Help people understand how their own security posture lies, what their own threat landscape looks like. And in time, when they buy into more of a broader strategy around security, that inevitably populates around the organization. And it becomes less of a spying and kind of surveillance activity and more of, this is just our culture. We're secure, we care about our data, we care about our own security as well.
One group who could help here are human resources, but at the moment they're completely sidelined from security. Oddly enough, they're the people responsible for onboarding and offboarding people. They're also the people who are supposed to deal with issues that people have at work, be they interpersonal with staff, but also, you know, old school personnel officers understood a lot that was going on in people's own lives. How do we re-engage with HR and make them part of this? Because that starts to change this culture conversation.
It absolutely does. I mean, technology, you kind of touched on it earlier on. Technology's traditionally, it's a male-dominated, we focus on just technology. Mm. If it's technology, if it's a security issue, it's a technology problem. It's with the IT team. It's so much bigger than that. It's with legal, it's with HR, as you suggest. It's also with marketing as well. I mean, in the event you get breached, you have to have a clear, concise message about what you're going to say to the market and what your message is to your customers, because they are effectively the people who are going to be impacted by this. So we really do need to engage, and security is much bigger than just an IT problem. You're absolutely right. HR have to be involved in coaching employees and ensuring they know and understand what their responsibilities are. And I think that's the key thing. It's their responsibility. It's not somebody else's. And once you take responsibility for that, it becomes much more ingrained in the culture, if you like. And I think, as you say, that can only be done by bringing on board HR, bringing on board legal and marketing as well for all of the offerings that they can bring to the table as well.
That neatly brings us back to the type of data that companies are holding, but also the way people behave around that data. Cloud has become a problem. People want to collaborate with partners. They have their own cloud services, their own Dropbox. They move stuff without thinking about it. We're trying to get better at tagging that data when it leaves the enterprise, at preventing that data from leaving the enterprise. Many cloud services don't meet many enterprise security controls. How do we, first of all, improve our understanding of the data? And then how do we apply that to data movement?
Yeah, I mean, the understanding of the data comes back to governance. We've got to understand what we're doing, what we've got, classify the data. The analogy I often give to this is, if you imagine you've got a flock of sheep, you've got prize sheep, you know exactly where they are, you know exactly who can access them, you've got a really secure perimeter around their field. And you'll do everything you can to protect those sheep. And so it's getting those governance principles in place first around the data. And then when you consider things like cloud technologies and also remote working. We increasingly now offer VPN tunnels to allow people to work from home. That's a legitimate way of moving data outside of an organization effectively. And that's where education's key. Do you actually understand the implications of the actions you're doing? Do you understand the classification of this data? And that's the challenge. I mean, most employees would say, I don't know what the classification of this data is, because the employer doesn't know what the classification is. So It's empowering employees to make decisions themselves to an extent, but also ensuring they understand the decisions they should be making around that data.
We've talked with people about data classification for 25, 30 years, if not more. Many of the original schemes were incredibly complicated, but they only worked on a small subset of data. Today, we have this vast amount of data around, and those schemes just really cannot be retrospectively applied. How do we simplify what we mean when we talk about data classification?
Yeah, it again comes back to understanding. A great example I can give is we've seen breaches in the past where actually the incident and the attack was very present and prominent in the log files. The reason it wasn't detected is because of all the noise. There was so much noise in there, and it was just missed, and it took a number of months before it was actually retrospectively detected. And that just emphasizes the fact that we can't make good decisions if we don't have good information. So we can't do good data classification if we don't exactly know what we're dealing with. So I think for me, it always comes back to getting a better handle on what we're dealing with. How can we put classifications on data when we don't know what data an organization has or what volume it has, who needs to access that? Without answering those questions, we can't make better decisions moving forward. And I think that's the real fundamental issue that we need to get towards addressing. And I think with legislation like GDPR, that's going to encourage those discussions.
But will it encourage? If we look at the current position with GDPR, we know it's introducing a whole new range of PII. That's going to make companies very nervous about the data they've got. They don't understand what's PII now in a lot of instances. So rather than encourage discussion, does it not run the risk of sending people into a complete security tailspin where they're paranoid about everything?
I think it's fair to suggest it could certainly trigger a tailspin, because at the moment it's still quite vague and not appropriately understood, I think it's probably fair to say. It's whose responsibility is it? Well, the legislation's being rolled out. There needs to be something that goes behind it. Again, coming back to education, we talk about educating the employees on the ground. Businesses don't quite understand the implications of this. As you say, we're introducing new types of PII, new challenges, new issues to address. And I think there needs to be some level of acceptance for that. This legislation is coming into force very, very quickly without really in my view, enough consultation of the broader impacts of it. Once the switch is tripped with GDPR, does it just, everything goes perfectly? That's not going to happen right now. Again, it's got to come down to, there's got to be a consultative period, there's got to be time where businesses can learn and understand what's going on, which at the moment I don't think is quite there yet.
When we start to look at this issue with data, GDPR and other privacy regulations, it's not just about Europe, it's about data moving in and out. Most companies have data flowing. How do we start to inline begin to do a better job? Because actually we could reduce a lot of our risk by identifying when data is being moved and either blocking it and giving the user an alternative application perhaps to store their data in, or simply just getting hold of that user and educating them.
Yeah, I mean, and that becomes a challenge, because especially as data is moving around the world, you can have controls in the US where you're looking at an endpoint, you've got an agent on an endpoint, and you're able to see whenever data is moving out, where it's moving to, and you can intercept it. And that's a very powerful solution when used appropriately. That same solution and technology can't often be used in other countries because privacy laws, it constitutes surveillance, spying and things. And that's where it really does become a challenge. And technology just doesn't answer the question fully.
If we move away from multinationals, who at least have some resources to work this out, we come back to the huge bulk of companies, which are SMEs. They've started to outsource a lot of the responsibility for their data, or at least they think they have. They're bringing in third-party providers to look at their data, to say, okay, you take over that. And they seem to think that absolves them of responsibility. What's it going to take to get the message back to them that it doesn't matter who you're employing to look after your data, your cloud provider, your service partner, whatever, you're the one that goes to jail when it all goes wrong?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. It's almost passing the responsibility, and that just is not the case here. The data, you are the data processor, the data controller. You're responsible for handling that data. Doesn't matter who's looking after your environment and your architecture. You're engaging with customers, you're signing contracts and NDAs and disclosure agreements with customers, the data is your responsibility. how that message comes across, it's got to come from the top down inside of organizations, I think. There's the notion of getting more, not IT guys, but getting more data privacy officers on the board, and certainly communicating at our board level with in an SME environment. And I think that's critical to be able to help businesses understand this. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's cost effective and it's more scalable to outsource your IT, but there's this big issue that you need to really recognize when you're doing that. And I think that can only come with having protection officers on the board and advising the board, really.
One of the things you did this week was you brought your e-discovery engine into your threat intelligence tooling. Now, e-discovery by its very nature is very good at finding all those little bits of information across multiple channels of communication. How well do you think this will now improve people's ability to understand their threat intelligence data? And what have you added to that to make this simple to use?
We're incredibly excited about what we bring to the table. We got the ability to go across terabytes and terabytes of data at huge speeds. And by doing that, we kind of get rid of those silos of data that we had before. We were able to bring all of that data together under one window, mm-hmm. give you full visibility and transparency into what's going on. That's incredibly important in the security space, but what's also been lacking is you can do a security investigation, you can do analysis of electronic data, that's absolutely fine. But what about what you learned during that investigation? What are the latest and greatest attacks? How are insiders operating inside of a network? Every time you do some analysis on some data, you learn something. And what's really been lacking in the industry is intelligence is a big buzzword, but storing and building and sharing intelligence has always been challenging. Mm-hmm. And what's been lacking in what we've really focused on with Nuix Insight is a framework for which to share data. So we call it the four dimensions of data. So effectively, this intelligence framework always brings the data back to a person. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, been lacking. We think technology is very technology-centric, but humans drive technology. Therefore, everything comes back to human activity and human behaviors. And building up intelligence around human behaviors allows you to better respond and protect your security of your data and your network. And that's been a great focus of ours, really. It's aggregating all of the different data repositories together, fully understanding what's going on, which really has never been done before, I think. Time is always of the essence when responding to a security incident. You find something and then you move on. What our focus is give you the broadest picture, bake in some intelligence to get you to the answer faster, and then you can respond in a much more timely manner and also make your security better in future.
Right at the beginning, you talked about the issue of context. E-discovery, of course, adds that context now, because we can start to see how these disparate bits of data actually do tie together, as we would do if we were trying to provide it for a law case. When we now start to run the intelligence tools from threat intelligence over the top, do you think that will result in a massive drop in false positives? Or actually, will we see a big increase in potential attacks suddenly being identified?
Bringing more context to the data and applying a layer of intelligence on top, I think it will reduce false positives, absolutely. But I think it will bring new investigative insights which we've never seen before. I think it'll expose things which we just, as a human, I'm not able to see, and the machine is able to correlate relationships, determine relationships in the data, and expose those, which an investigator just can't piece together anymore. The data is too disparate, it's too broad, it's too large. Only a machine can bring that together. But that's not saying that human investigative technology is completely redundant. Mm-hmm. It's the investigator's brain and mindset that forms that intelligence layer. And as that continues to evolve, I do think we will start to see more and more critical findings from data sets as we're responding to incidents. And that can only improve our preventative posture moving forward.
Looks like we're finally going to get to solve part of this huge amount of data coming in.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. It's all about going back to basics, but it's the context around the data that we're generating is incredibly important. And we mustn't lose sight of that. And mm-hmm. building up intelligence and getting a comprehensive picture of what's going on, both real time and from an autopsy perspective, is going to allow us to certainly get a handle on the incident, on the issue at hand.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
Great, thank you.